Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 330, Murder on the Orient Express. Or if you're Keith Morrison, Murder. No, that's Curly.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
That's Curly Howard.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
this guy.
Don't you think it's about time we change this to Murder on the Asian Express?
Yes. I think it's okay because you can call things Oriental, but not people.
That's correct.
Right, so rugs are Oriental. I think that's okay. I thought that's the last
Oriental
I've heard.
Rugs are okay.
If the last I've heard from what's acceptable.
And I guess it's acceptable because at no time does the plot enter the Orient.
Right.
That's true.
And isn't that this is a real train. That's the name of the train, right?
I don't know.
Who am I, Mr. Amtrak?
I don't know.
You're
the oldest one here. Trains were a thing. When
yes,
you were
they were.
Up.
So like, that's right.
They were more common. Now I'm wondering. Now I have to go Google it. Is Murder on the Orient Express?
He makes it sound like I was there when they put the golden spike in Promontory, Utah, in 18
Paul,
whatever.
Paul was keeping a close eye on John Henry versus the Machine.
Hang on. I typed, is Murder on the Orient Express? The Orient Express. Is the Orient Express.
Even Google's like, that's racist.
Yeah. Google auto-corrected that to Asian Express.
Yes. Google banned me.
Which I'm pretty
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, okay.
That's in the food court, isn't it, Asian Express?
I think so, yeah.
I'm not crazy. It's a real thing. It's a long-distance passenger train service created in 1883 by Compagnie International. There's probably a foreign way to pronounce that.
No, it's international.
Oh, okay. The route and rolling stock of the Orient Express changed many times. So, but yes, that, okay. So it is a real thing. Because I will say the one thing that I took away from this film, murder be damned, I want to ride on that train.
You're goddamn right. So there's a show, there's a comic show in Chicago called C2E2.
I don't think it goes there.
It does not.
No.
But. Like, I'd never ridden a train before.
I mean, just because they sell manga there doesn't mean the Orient
true.
Express is going to take
it. It is in high demand there. But I'd never ridden a train before.
Right.
And I was just like, you know what? It's cheap. I can sit in first class, quote unquote first class.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, the train from St. Louis to Chicago, it's not a long ride. I mean, it's the same as driving, basically, maybe a little bit faster. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I got a kick out of it. It's so much fun.
Well, sometime you need to go to Europe and go, like, my wife and I went to Italy for the first time 3 years ago, and we took the fast train between Rome and Florence.
Yeah.
150 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
And you can't tell. If you just close your eyes and you're just sitting there, there's no sensation of high speed. Because
so it,
everything's moving at the speed
of sound. Yeah, everything's in relation.
But you look
to, yeah.
out the window and don't look down at the ground. The ground is going by too fast. The distance is cool.
Yeah.
But, oh, man.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
There was talk for a while of putting in a bullet train from here to Chicago that was going to be like an hour.
They're still working on that, but it was not going to go from downtown St. Louis to downtown Chicago.
No.
It was going to go from like Alton.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Still.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But probably you'd have to Uber to Alton.
To Alton, yeah,
probably
right,
because
right.
it didn't cross the state line that way.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
Because I've always heard that part of the reason the Metrolink, this is hyper local stuff.
Right.
So there's we have a light rail system here that it, almost for years now it's a little better. For years it literally just went a straight line.
That's
did
it.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
Like it went airport downtown done. But it actually crosses over to Illinois, and I've the story I heard was that the reason it did that was by crossing the state line they could get federal money for it. And so they went ahead it goes across there was one exit on the other side of the river just to be like, we crossed the state line. It's
high-speed train in the United States that's furthest along but still not there after like 10 or 15 years is the one in California that was supposed to connect Los Angeles to San Francisco. But with all these places, you're talking about densely populated places where you'd have to use eminent domain
to
take their houses away to put tracks down. And you're not doing that through Silicon Valley because no one can afford that.
No.
Good luck.
Like the only way you're going to get that on board is if Google just decides that it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And then
they'll figure out a way.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but...
just put it right through our building.
But what about Supertrain? That was around in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Supertrain?
I don't...
it's another thing that you don't know. Yeah. Supertrain was...
Fred Silverman's idea
at
NBC.
NBC's answer to Love Boat.
Correct.
But on a train, on a super train.
I see.
And it was really bad.
Oh.
Horrible.
It was a tragedy.
It made Love Boat look classy.
Yeah. Ooh. It was a tragedy. The train was attacked by Manimal. And everyone died, which is another show you don't remember.
I know Manimal.
May you remember Manimal?
Yeah, that's a superhero,
of course.
Yeah, it's kind of superhero. So, yeah, it was a...
gobble up anything I could get superhero-wise.
Yeah, so the train was attacked by Manimal, but luckily he was finally taken down by the Misfits of Science.
Oh, nope, you got me there.
What?
Nope.
Misfits of Science?
Oh, that
greatest
was like...
American Hero? Could that
reference? Oh, that one, yeah. I got that
Misfits
one.
Misfits of Science was kind of like an X-Men knockoff.
Oh.
Courtney Cox was on it.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
It was a pre-Friends Courtney Cox.
Was it a pre-Bruce Springsteen?
I think it was on the heels of that, actually.
Okay.
I think it was like she had done that. That kind of got her noticed, and then she got this.
Okay. So. All of these series we're talking about, if you go on Amazon Prime,
they're all there.
You can't order them because no one made DVDs of this crap.
Right. But
it's
a lot of
streaming.
A lot of it's on YouTube. It's posted for free because nobody cares.
Right.
It's like, yeah, man, go for it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's awesome.
We weren't going to make royalties off this anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah, go for it.
One day we'll tell you about Casablanca starring David Soul.
Oh.
Or Clerks starring Jim Brewer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That finally popped up.
It did.
Yeah, but you can get Casablanca with David Soul on DVD now.
What a weird choice.
Yeah.
Of a thing to remake.
And it lasted like... I think it might have lasted even a full season. Like, there were more episodes on that DVD than I would have thought.
That doesn't mean they aired.
Touche.
Yeah, I think it was like the Flash TV show, not the new one.
Yeah.
There were like, I think there were like two or three extra episodes.
Yeah, they were done.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, we should probably go around the table and introduce ourselves.
I am Paul Harris.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Tom. So, just real quick, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You should subscribe. And if you don't use iTunes, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcast. So
do wherever you want.
Yes, and we will show up like magic
in your movie rectangle
and your music rectangle box. So anyway, also facebook.com/realspoilers, on Twitter @realspoilers. There, I've done all that.
Good job.
So we shall now dig into the Murder on the Orient Express. Joe is our synopsisizer of record. Good luck.
It's dense, man. It is dense. I know that this is a book. I know that she has.
It's based on a book, so it's a pretty safe assumption. You are unfamiliar with it.
That is not a safe bet. That is a guaranteed
yes.
bet. That is, that's what I said last time. I'm like, did Dell do like a Golden Key?
Right. Is there a classic illustrator?
You're saying if Joe were to read a book, it would not be one from 1934.
Right.
No.
Is that when this book came out?
Yes.
Okay, so I know the movie takes place in 1934. So
yes.
When this book came out, it was taking place in the present day?
Correct.
I did not realize
Interesting.
That.
I read Gone Girl and Girl on a Train. That's as far as I can get.
Same
to.
Thing. Well, yeah, we don't have right. to do it. Thanks for no. listening.
Yeah. Did you read Gone Girl?
No.
Okay. Oh,
my wife did.
That was fun.
I will tell the story again for Paul. So
that's good.
So my wife, my current wife, who's lovely and awesome, was like, oh, you should read Gone Girl. I think you'll like it. And I'm like, okay. And if you haven't seen or read Gone Girl
who's
yet,
the one guy?
You might.
Who is it?
Yeah, who did
was
I do that to? No. Who did I do that? It was a listener I ruined it for by accident. But it, so you should probably skip ahead a couple, you know, yeah, a 2 minutes or so. So
on a show called Real Spoilers.
But, you know, they didn't tune in for Gone Girl Real Spoilers. They tuned in for Murder on the Orient Express.
You did spoilers. Gone Girl on the show, didn't
we
you?
Did.
Yeah, this, we
did.
Had a listener, God love him, who skipped that episode and was going to go back to it. And then like three episodes after that, we accidentally ruined the movie for him. So we're okay. Like, sorry. So reading the book, so I'm going to ruin the twist of the
we'll
book.
Say that. Spoilers in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so the twist of the book is that you're reading the two stories are toggling back and forth as diary entries of a sort, right? And you're reading hers and his, and you think, you know, and it's really
he's
set up
present day, and you're reading her
in the past. Yeah. So it kind of the movie follows that motif pretty closely, and so you're reading her version of what their marriage was like, and it's really set up to make you think that, like, she's like this sweet, loving woman, and he's really kind of a dick to her. And it starts with just her, it starts off with her version of the story,
mm-hmm.
and is the first kind of chunk that you get. And I'm like 10 pages in, and I set the book down, I turned to my wife who was reading it, and like, I'm not asking you to spoil this book for me, but is this a well written book? Do you feel like this is a well written book? She's like, yes, I feel like this is a very well written book. I was like, if this is a well written book, this bitch is crazy. And she's like, what? And she's like, I'm not saying one way or the other, but like, what makes you think that? And I was, and of course the bitch is crazy.
Absolutely.
And I was like, cause this is my ex-wife. This is a, this is a smart version of my ex-wife.
Wow.
And I was like instantly, I'm like, if this bitch isn't crazy, this is a poorly written book, because what she is doing is insanely manipulative, mm-hmm. to the nth degree. And she's pretending like she's not
she's
doing
sweetheart.
It.
Right.
And you're the problem for not enjoying her manipulation. And I'm like, this is my first marriage.
Yep.
To a T.
Yep.
And like instantly, boom,
I love
crazy.
That movie so much. Yeah. That book and movie. Like, I'm surprised. I thought she had. So she's got two other books. I thought they were. They had one with Charlize Theron that got buried
because
it was not good.
Yeah,
because
I think, and I think the goal was that that book had gotten licensed, and then Gone Girl got licensed and became a phenomenon, and then I think they decided to bury that so they could probably remake it.
I'm surprised those haven't come out
with a bigger budget.
Sharper Objects and
Sharp Objects in Dark Places.
I've read
Sharp Objects, and it's good, but it's not Gone Girl good.
What's the? Is that the Charlize Theron one?
I think it was.
Then that's the one I've read.
And I because that's the one where the girl's cutting herself. She's a cutter. She goes back to her hometown.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And I haven't read.
She's
the
like
other
a
one.
Hermit, kind of. I'm just surprised that given the success of Gone Girl that we haven't seen either one of those novels.
Well, and she's working on a show on HBO
with David Fincher.
Fincher.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Which I'm cool with that too.
Yeah.
Mindhunter.
I haven't watched it yet. Is it good?
That's the David.
That's the Fincher one.
Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is...
I've heard good things.
Excellent.
I got to the first episode, and I was like, I need to invest. Like, this is not one of those shows where you can just, like, turn it on and be like, and having the... Like, that's what... you need to invest some time.
Right.
Yeah.
Much like Stranger Things Season 2.
I thought Season 2 was better than Season
1. I agree with you.
Season 1 I enjoyed, but I was like, I don't think it's deserving of all this, like, people
it was fun.
Being obsessed with
it. I enjoyed
it
a lot.
But I thought Season 2 was way better.
Yeah. And it's also, hey, Netflix, here's the deal. If you're going to put out a show with kick-ass credits, I'm not going to skip it. So stop asking me. Like, I'll skip the end credits. I've never, like, the Marvel stuff and Stranger Things, I watch the opening credits every time.
It's funny because, like, the kids, when we first started, Brian was like, don't skip the intro. And then as towards the end, he's like, skip it.
No.
Like, get to the show.
Oh, yeah,
I want to see what's
going
to happen.
Right,
yeah.
So, no, I love that intro so much. I figured I turned off the motion smoothing
as
on my
well
TV.
You should.
I didn't know.
You're like, not a cretin.
No. And I was just like, oh, this is the way it's supposed to look.
Yes.
It's so much better. So much better.
Always turn off the motion smoothing.
Yes.
Like, that's... Unless you're just a sports guy, unless you're only watching football and stuff, then I think motion smoothing is... But if you're watching movies...
Don't do it.
Don't turn on motion
smoothing. It looks like garbage.
No.
Yeah.
Well, and you got... It's not don't turn it on. You have to go turn it off.
Because
it's like the default setting, because they think it makes the TVs look better. So.
No, you're
wrong. Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes. So, I never read this book. And I absolutely love this movie. I thought it was... I was engaged the entire time. I thought everybody on screen was doing their job.
Right.
I was invested in everything. I thought Kenneth Branagh kicked so much ass as this character. Like, he was like the the artsy version of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
Like his version, this is his version of Sherlock Holmes, and I loved it. I thought Kevin said that it was the best mustache in Hollywood. I respectively disagree because I think Kurt Russell grows the greatest mustache
in Hateful Eight.
And that mustache is fantastic. It's such a great mustache.
The movie that the mustache that Kenneth Branagh has in Murder on the Orient Express was about the finest whiskery you could do.
That is true.
In the 1930s.
Yeah. That is true.
But today, no one would have that, even if they were trying to be Brooklyn ironic.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
too
much work.
Like, he's got the mustache, but then he's got, like, it's not mustache.
He's got
it's
foreground a, it's, and background.
Yeah, right.
His mustache has a drop shadow.
He's got depth.
Very good.
He added
very
depth
good
to his mustache.
Yeah.
So he's done working. We meet him for the first time, and he's just finished this case, and he's kind of said that's
it. I loved this opening scene.
It's so good.
Where did you like this movie or no?
Yeah.
People are like, there's a lot of people that are kind of on it, and I think. It's funny. I think we're the three phases of this movie, except for maybe just outright hatred. But because you loved it.
I did, yeah.
I liked it, but I didn't love it. And you're more in the meh.
Yeah.
And I think it gets a little slow in the middle.
A little?
Yeah. And
it didn't bother me at all.
And I feel like it's really difficult to adapt Agatha Christie because she had like there's so many like clues buried in the details
right.
that you can hide on the page that you just. If you put them on the screen that way, it's like no one's going to realistically see those clues or they have to force feed them to you.
Also, in a book, you can be full of exposition about your characters.
Right.
Then in a 2-hour movie, you can't.
Right.
Which you would think would make the movie go faster, but it slows down to the point where the train, trapped in an avalanche, is moving faster than the plot.
Right. Yeah, you can't do that without some very lazy exposition.
Yes.
And you know.
And that's one of the problems I have with this is the ending, which we'll get to.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I think I just was more forgiving of it. But it's definitely a legitimate complaint. Yeah,
yeah. That's fair. So he is finishing up this case, and he has decided, I need to take a break. Like, I've worked very hard. He tells you he's the greatest detective that's ever lived. So we know that he has been bouncing around from place to place solving crimes. So he runs into, as he's getting ready to leave, he runs into a friend of his. They don't really explain that relationship other than, he ends up in another country.
He's in Istanbul.
Istanbul. And this
he
is
starts
where
in Israel and then.
He sees it.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess we should say the opening scene of this movie, which was phenomenal. So we are told that there's a priest, a rabbi,
And an imam.
And he was like, it sounds like a joke. Like,
right.
I've heard this joke before.
And like everybody's gathered at the Wailing Wall. And he has to figure out who did the crime. And obviously, whoever he picks,
it's going to be bad. Like,
somebody's going to see it as some sort of religious.
There's going to be some wailing.
The police chief even says, he's like, I've got three religions that are on the verge of a civil war out there. Can we get this on the done? So he goes out and he does the Sherlock Holmes thing where he's just like, look, these three men, you could see him. He takes his cane and he sticks it into the wall and he's like, I need an armed guard at the south door now. And so like one guy runs off. So he lays out his whole deal. And it turns out that the police chief is the one who stole this rare gem to keep his job.
Yeah, a religious artifact of some sort. Yeah.
To keep his job. Basically, because
he wants everybody at each other's throats because that he still has a job.
Things are starting to become civil.
And this is why historically there's peace in the Middle East to this day.
Correct.
Because they found the stone.
Because of him. Yeah.
Because of Hercule Poirot.
Poirot.
So he's just like, look, there's a boot mark. None of these guys wear boots. You wear boots. Did you go to his chambers? Yes, I did. Did you find this bag? Yes, I did. And there it is. Solves the case.
And there's a great scene where the guy runs away. He runs one direction. They run him back the other, and he runs right
clotheslines himself
into the cane that he put in the wall. And it was like, and I just loved how it was clever and how quickly they established that this guy is a brilliant detective.
Yes,
and it with humor and like,
and it is Sherlock Holmes.
Let me just interrupt for just a second here to ask you a question. He calls himself the most famous detective in the world, and at some point, so does Sherlock Holmes in one of the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Who is currently the most famous detective in the world in 2017?
You mean, like, in terms of real life?
Real life.
Keith Morrison from Dateline NBC.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the most famous detective doesn't have to have hidden cameras.
So. Yeah. No, but, that was Chris. That was that's Chris. You, you know, that's
Chris Hansen.
Yeah, it's Chris Hansen. Keith Morrison is the guy that's like, ooh.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
But that was at a time where these people thought wherever they were was the entire world.
Yeah, that is fair. True.
I'm fairly
true.
Sure at least four continents had never heard of Hercule Poirot or Sherlock Holmes.
That is, she was translated into a lot of languages. At one time, wasn't she the author who was translated?
No, but I mean in the context of the story itself.
Absolutely. Right, right. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's funny. Batman. He's the greatest detective.
Yes.
That's, you know. So he goes to Istanbul and he runs into a friend of his,
not Constantinople,
not if they might be giants have taught me anything.
Yes.
Where he just kind of, this is a scene that I loved. Like, I thought this was great where his buddy comes out from somewhere he's obviously not supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he has been getting a little frisky with this girl and he's like, oh, this is my friend. And he's the greatest detective. And like, what makes us so great is I don't ask him about anything. Like, yeah. I don't care about his cases and we're friends. And he was just like, and they're going back and forth. And he was like, and you're a prostitute. And she was like, I am.
Yeah. Like it was funny just how much she owned it. Like, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you for asking.
I'm the most famous prostitute in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a claim I would want to make.
Yeah.
I'm good. So he kind of says, he's like,
you
look.
You could probably charge more.
You probably could. That's true. That's a good point. He's like.
Get an endorsement deal for breath mints.
Yeah. Or Magnum.
Yeah.
Either way.
And if they were Magnums, they wouldn't need to be going to a prostitute.
That's true. That's fair. the friend kind of says, look, just ride on this, like, take this train with me. Like, we'll get you on there. It'll be great. And the guy's like, oh, you know, Kenneth Branagh is just like, I can't, you know, it's okay. Like, I don't want to impose. He's like, no. Like, this is my train. I'm the head of this train. You come on and we'll get you where you need it. We'll take care of you. Blah, blah. So he's going to get on the train and it turns out there's no spots in first class left. So there's a name that they talk about of a person who doesn't show up. And I guess part of the policy is like you have to check in half an hour before the train leaves. If you don't, you lose your seat.
The murder on the Orient Express is operated by American Airlines. It's a precursor.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That guy showed up 29 minutes before the train and got dragged off.
And they said no.
He's, that's Delta, actually. He gets us arrested. Yeah.
They Dr. Dowd him.
Yeah. So
he ended up on the, if you're late for the Orient Express, you end up on the Midnight Express.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You don't want to do that.
No.
Don't
want to
do that.
Serpentine. Man, that's a great movie. That's a fantastic movie. So the guy loses his seat. Now, is this a character? Does this person?
That doesn't show?
Yeah. Is this a thing? Or, like, was it supposed to be a thing? Or no?
I don't remember. It's been so long since I read the book. Okay. But I was thinking because everybody on the train was... we're spoiling the movie. Everybody in the should we just give away the ending now so we can discuss it?
So here's we're going to spoil it right now.
Yeah. So and this is probably one of the most famous solutions. I said last time about how you can't change the ending to this because if you did, you're not telling the story.
Right.
And the giveaway is who committed the murder was everybody.
All of them.
They all hated him. They all had a reason to hate him. And,
right.
And they all teamed up and they pulled a murder train on a murder train.
Basically.
Yeah. And so so my question was this guy supposed to be part of the murder plot?
That's my question.
Or was this one guy who's going to be like, holy shit.
What is happening?
What is happening?
Or he could have, like, we've seen it in movies before where they set it up to where there's one person on the train that could, or one person that could be your alibi. You know, like that one person who's not attached to anything. And maybe that was supposed to, I don't know.
I was with him all night.
Yeah. Right, right.
Well, and that's what I think is clever about the construction of this murder is everybody, because they all did it, everybody starts alibiing everybody else. Like, you know, and so like that's what makes it, you know, so you had seen the original or read the book?
I saw the 74 Lunette version.
As did I. So, like I knew the answer going in.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, I was wondering if the movie would still hold my interest when I know who did it,
right?
Or who's did it, you know, and
who done it?
Yeah, but you know, multiple who's.
Oh, yeah.
And it did, and it was kind of fun to watch how, like, knowing the answer, it's in front of you the whole time. Like,
she, it is.
I mean, that's why she's the greatest mystery writer of all time. Like, she doesn't cheat.
Nope.
It's.
I don't think the movie cheats either.
I didn't feel like it did. The answer is there from the minute he sees the body. He's like, there are 12 stab wounds in this person.
Right,
and
right.
And it's like, and there are 12 suspects. Like, yes. It's kind of like looking back. If you don't know the answer, you're like,
dang it.
How did it's right there.
Yep. As Paul Harris said on The Arrival. Aha!
Yeah. Now I get it.
Yeah.
So he gets on the train and he's partnered up with, I guess it was Josh Gad's character, Maddox, I think was his name. And we're introduced to everybody. So from the very beginning, we met what's her name? The girl who played Ray.
Daisy Ridley,
and her and the British doctor. And they kind of have an interaction.
We Leslie just Odom Jr.
Is that who that is?
Yes.
Where would I know him from?
Hamilton.
Okay.
I know you're a big Hamilton
fan. I'm a huge Hamilton fan.
I mean, massive. Joe and Broadway are synonymous.
like this.
Yeah.
So they kind of have an interaction that Perot sees, and he's just like, that was weird. All right. And so we've got those two characters are on this train. We've got Josh Gad and Johnny Depp and Michelle Pfeiffer and
Penelope Cruz
and Willem Dafoe. And so you've got all of these people who are just, you know, they seem like completely normal passengers on this train that have filled the passenger car. We've also got this Hollywood starlet and her quick to punch people out, like husband. Like that
it was
guy,
the 30s.
Yeah, you could do that back then.
Not a Hollywood starlet, a countess.
A countess, yeah. Right. I'm sorry. He was like a famous dancer.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So, and they're in the first class spot, and, you know, that they're like, we can't touch that. Like, that's them. So, as the move, like, we go to dinner, and we're introduced to all of these characters. Like,
it's like Snowpiercer.
It is like Snowpiercer in the 1930s.
Right.
What an awesome movie that was, too. And we're slowly, like, Johnny Depp is a sleazeball. And
he's a mobster.
He is a mobster.
He sells
imports and exports.
Like rugs,
rare stuff.
Yeah, but he's clearly a mobster.
Yes, yes.
This is a front.
Yes.
That's his legit business.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
It's like Don Corleone was an olive oil salesman.
Yes.
Yeah. Jenko.
Yeah. And he kind of has an interaction with Daisy Ridley where he kind of sits down with her and she pretty much is like, you're disgusting. Like, I want nothing to do with you. And he doesn't know what to do. Like, he's
right.
Just like, okay. And you could tell that he's a little on edge. Like, the entire time we see that character, he's on edge the entire time. And then there's a scene after the dinner scene where he kind of sits down with Kenneth Brenna and is just like, look, I hear you're the greatest detective of all time. I need you to protect me. And Brenna's just like, nah, I'm good. Like,
do you remember, was this scene in the original?
No.
Okay, because it felt like Heat to me.
We have these two actors, we need to get them together.
Right, we have these two great actors, yes. And they don't have a scene together. We need to craft a scene.
And I liked the scene.
I did too. I'm not complaining.
Also, you know, Johnny Depp's not going to be around too long since he's the victim.
Right.
So
right.
We better get our, you know, bang for the buck here.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Correct. So and I liked the scene a lot where they kind of sit down and they have this, I wouldn't call it intense, but intense enough where Kenneth Brenna's like, I know you're full of shit. Thank you. You're welcome, Kevin.
I don't like you.
Yeah, and I don't want your money. Like, I know where your money comes from. Get out of here. And he's I like where they're, he's like, can I have, they're sharing this piece of cake. And Perot is very particular about everything. Like,
yeah.
There's a scene in the beginning where he's trying to find
like a precursor to Monk.
Pretty much. Yeah. Where he has to have like the same size eggs and everything needs to be the same. And he's like, can I just have this little sliver and the top part? Like there's like a little piece of icing on the very top. And Depp is just like, sure, I guess.
He's trying to watch his figure.
Right. Of course. So they all go back to their cabins. There's a commotion. Kenneth Brenna kind of pokes his head out.
A locomotion.
Oh, I see what you did there. He pokes his head out and he sees a woman in a red kimono run down the car and take off. And then we find out that Johnny Depp has been murdered. 12 different stab wounds.
And the stab wounds are all different, right?
Correct.
Like that's another thing that where it's right in your face. The stab wounds are all like,
different. The doctor
some
says,
are deep, some are like slashing, some are, it's all.
Leslie Odom Jr. kind of says, he's like, this looks like somebody did it with their eyes closed, basically. So now the rest of this movie, we're trying to figure out who killed who. And like Tom said, everybody is alibiing everybody. So, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer is kind of like, no, there was somebody in my room and, you know, nobody believes me. And of course, she's kind of firing on Kenneth Branagh, but it's, I'm not really sure. Like, maybe I think there was a little bit there that was actually like the attraction, but also like trying to throw him off the.
Well, the trains broke down, so she needs a mustache ride.
And it's one hell of a mustache
yes.
ride.
Yes, it is.
You need a mustache ride. You go.
That's the guy with the mustache.
Poirot.
That's right. Not Hercules.
Right.
Which I did enjoy.
Yeah.
So he starts to break. He starts to interview each person, and he's just doing what he does. He's doing his job. And I don't remember how we got to the case. Like, how we got to the underlying case. How did he figure out connection?
Okay, here's the problem that I have with this movie above and beyond everything else.
Okay. Sure.
Exactly what you just said. How did we get to the details that got him to the finale?
Right.
And that's the problem with this movie, because you don't have all that exposition about all these characters, don't know all that stuff. There was a Neil Simon parody movie called Murder by Death, which you've seen.
Yeah, with Peter Falk.
And, yes,
yeah.
It's got all these various famous actors playing famous mystery writers who all get invited to Truman Capote's mansion, Truman Capote's character's mansion at, it's off in the woods somewhere.
Sure.
And in the end, we find out the reason that this Truman Capote character has invited all these mystery writers there is because he's sick of them writing books in which they leave out all the pertinent information until the last 8 pages, and then the detective miraculously solves things, knowing things that the reader never knew.
Right.
Right.
That's Murder by Death condensed.
Right.
Okay.
That's the same thing that happens in this movie. At the end, Kenneth Branagh's character, Hercule Poirot, knows things that we haven't seen him learning.
So he finds Johnny Depp's in his cabin. He had a burnt note, and he picks up the note and he figures out what it says. And in that note, there's a detail about, we will never forget Daisy. And he's just like, okay, there was this case.
It's basically the Lindbergh baby.
Basically.
Yeah.
Did they find that baby? They never found that baby, did they?
Do they eventually find the baby?
I don't know.
I don't think they did.
Yeah.
And this one they do.
Yeah.
So,
and then they eat it.
This is a prequel to Mother.
It's a prequel to Mother.
Wow.
There you go, Brad.
Yeah,
Every episode, we have
an eating a baby joke.
So there's a note that basically that gives the clue there's this famous missing baby case. And so Kenneth Branagh starts breaking down. So first he goes to Josh Gad's character, who is Johnny Depp's assistant. And throughout the process, like, he's beginning to think that maybe Josh Gad is the culprit.
Were you a little put off by the fact that this train is trapped in an avalanche?
Yeah.
And Josh Gad's character never once wanted to build a snowman?
So I thought there was a moment where I was just like, oh man, please don't make a Frozen joke. Like, if we can avoid the Frozen joke, that'd be great. But, and they did.
Yeah.
He never won.
He should have built a snowman.
Should have built a snowman.
Just telling you, he had all that snow there.
That's all right. Could have built a little Olaf. When's that one coming out? Is that next year?
I think so. Right. This year we get Coco in 2 weeks.
No, I think it's next week.
Is it?
I think so. I could be wrong.
Yeah, just you normally are.
Yeah, that's true. That's also true.
You're normally early.
Yeah.
That's what your wife says.
That's why I got 2 kids. No, it's not. You're planned. If you ever hear this, you were both planned. It's fine. So Josh Gad has been burning. He tried to burn this ledger that Johnny Depp was working on. And it turns out that Gad's character was skimming from the top. And he was just like, look, it was dirty money. You know, going on and on about how much of a creep Johnny Depp was.
By the way, for you kids listening in, don't try to skim from the bottom. It's so much
it's
easier to do
skim
from the top.
You deal from the bottom, you skim from the top.
Correct.
Yes.
Coming from you know poker
player.
Yeah, so let's.
So
he knows poker and the dairy industry.
Interesting.
Correct. Yeah.
Interesting. Yes. Yeah. So Josh Gad kind of lays out his backstory, and he's like, I was going to be a lawyer, but I was really bad at it, blah, blah. Kenneth Branagh puts it together that this guy's dad is the prosecutor who charged a nanny, right? Was it the nanny?
Yep.
Wrongly in this case.
And then wouldn't back off because he didn't want to be wrong and he needed a conviction.
And then she killed herself and he was basically shunned and run out of town. Or does he kill himself?
I don't remember.
Either way, the dad is disgraced.
Shame has befallen them.
Right. So yeah. He's like, because of that. So we're just going to, like, the Johnny Depp character has a different name. Like, I don't remember what his name is.
Ratchet. And his real last name was like
Cassetti,
yeah. Franco and Cassetti.
Of course it's Cassetti. Like,
well, he's a mobster. Yeah,
of course.
By the way, if you had that Cassetti with the pesto sauce, it's delicious.
They don't even make Cassettis anymore. They just go on straight to CDs and then they do whatever. So he figures out that Cassetti is the guy who got away with the murder. So he was working for...
Which is kind of funny. Like, so he solves the unsolved Lindbergh right. baby case so he can solve this case.
Yes, exactly. Like, he solves two cases
yeah.
at one time. So we are under the assumption that Josh Gad, because of a disgraced father, was going after Cassetti, Johnny Depp's character.
Right.
And they think they've kind of got it. And then all of a sudden, they don't got it.
Right.
The, Michelle Pfeiffer ends up getting stabbed. And then all hell breaks loose. Like, I will also, like, Daisy Ridley, who I'm really glad she's doing some, like, she's a fantastic actress. Like, I thought she was great as Rey. We'll see her again at the end of the year. But I was hoping that she would avoid the Star Wars curse. You know, like, you're, with the exception of Harrison Ford, they all got typecast. Like, you, they never really did anything besides Star Wars for the most part.
Not as actors. I mean, Carrie Fisher obviously was in other, she was in Harry Met Sally, but
that's true.
But she was more, had, I think, kind of carved out a place for herself as a, as an author.
Oh, really?
And script doctor.
And a script doctor.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then obviously Mark Hamill found the Joker and things like that way after Star Wars.
Right. And it was, I kind of feel, not to take away from Mark Hamill, but I kind of feel like his casting as the Joker initially was
a stunt.
Was a stunt casting. Absolutely, like, and Mark Hamill is a Joker, and they turned out to be brilliant.
Yeah, and then you hear his Joker, you're like, oh.
Right.
That's terrifying.
Right.
Did you ever hear him read
Donald Trump tweets?
No.
Oh.
He read Heath Ledger's lines
from
The Dark Knight as the Joker, and it is haunting. Like, to hear his version of the Joker do the whole, why do I have these, you know, how did I get these scars?
Right.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. So I'm glad that hopefully gets away from the Star Wars, not altogether. Obviously.
This is her Corvette summer.
Yes. That's what's exactly what this is. Wow. That's impressive.
I agree.
Yeah. because she's great. Like,
I could have said 8 is enough.
Yeah, that would not have worked for me. I've seen Corvette summer.
Yeah. Mark Hamill was the oldest brother on 8 is enough.
And really?
And the pilot. And then he went off and did Star Wars, and they had to recast it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And Christopher Plummer played that role from there on out. No.
Oh, I was like, no, we didn't.
I'm just going with the recasting thing.
Yeah.
And she is super standoffish. Like, she is almost kind of on his level as far as intelligence. So she's not answering the questions completely. We know that there was an interaction earlier between her and the doctor. She is also leading you down a path where you're just like, well, maybe it was her. So as we're progressing, more and more of these people are starting to come to light that they were all involved. Armstrong. That's the name.
Yeah. Oh, the baby case is what you're in the name.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's Armstrong.
Armstrong. Thank you.
Glad I could help. Yeah. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. So they're starting, more and more of these people are starting to,
you realize they're all
connected.
They all have a connection to this case.
Right.
And I think this is how Agatha Christie, it's interesting. I feel like this is how she prevents people from solving the case.
How do you mean?
As they're reading the book. Is because, like, when I watched the original movie or read the book, I forget which I did first, but I spent a good chunk of it thinking, this is really lazy writing. Like, why would all these people be on the same train? Like, that's a ridiculous conceit.
All the people who are connected like
right,
that?
Right, and as you're going through it, you're also thinking, well, I thought it was A, but it can't be A because now it's definitely B. No,
right.
It can't be B. It's got to be C.
Right. It's like algebra. Like, every suspect cancels out another suspect to where it's like, this doesn't make sense.
None of it makes sense.
But I was also, I spent a large chunk of time thinking, this is lazy writing because it's a ridiculous conceit that all these people affiliated with this case would happen to be on this train
right.
3,000 miles away from where it happened. And they're, you know, none of them, and some of them don't even really have the means to be there.
Correct.
You know, it's it's a very expensive train.
Right.
But only 12 people can get on that train. That's the weird part of it. I've been on trains, unlike Joe. I've actually been on trains. There are always more than 12 people.
Right. Yeah.
I don't care if it's a luxury train like this. 12 people on a train?
That's a wonky business model.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
But and so like I spent a good chunk of time thinking like why is this considered a great story? Like does it make any sense?
Right.
Like I mean it's just a lazy premise. And so I think she kind of distracts you by making you think she wrote a lazy story when she didn't at all.
Punches you in the dick at the end.
Yeah, and then of course they're all on this train. That was the point.
Right.
And instead of thinking that's the point and this is what's going on, you kind of it's almost like the red herring is breaking the fourth wall.
Kind of. I can see that. That's a good
sense. she's pulling you out of the story and having you say, well, that's ridiculous that they would all be there. Because if you accept the story as well written and you say, why would all these people be on the train together? Because they're all going to kill him.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a connection.
Yeah.
They're all supposed to be there.
That makes it make sense. But that seems like such a ridiculous notion that your mind can't even postulate that as a theory.
Right. You're so early into the book or into the story. You're just like, this doesn't make any sense. So he goes to see Judi Dench and her Hildegard, I think was her. And you recognize that woman. She was on Grace Point was the American Broadchurch from the BBC with Doctor Who and the Purple Man, David Tennant.
Oh, okay.
And then she was in Hot Fuzz. She's the slutty, not slutty, but like the flirty cop in the little town.
Oh,
She's great. Like, she's fantastic. And she's kind of Dame Judi Dench. Judi Dench kind of plays like this countess and she's like her handler basically. And we find out that Judi Dench is the sister of she's the aunt of the woman who killed of the Armstrong mother.
I can't believe you can keep all this straight.
If I can keep the Fast and the Furious straight, I feel like I could do this. Is
you're like, this is at least well written.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So Dame Judi Dench is the aunt. So, right, you've got the two Armstrongs and the baby.
Should make you feel better. He is a police officer.
That's
so, like,
true.
He's like, he can keep facts. All this straight. Like, and just to be in the interest of full disclosure, you don't have notes in front
no,
of you.
I don't.
Like, you're not like skimming Wikipedia while you do this.
I am always impressed when I come here and hear you winging it with
these things.
Thank
you very much.
Because I've reviewed these things on my show and I can't remember half of the stuff you're talking
I know.
About.
It's so funny. You think a guy that has, what are they? I've had 6 concussions in my life and I now have. It's like very small traumatic brain injury, and you'd think that kind of guy can't remember things like this,
right?
But I can.
It's your anniversary. You can't remember.
Not for my life. My life.
And for those of you wondering, that's why Joe no longer plays in the NFL.
Also true. I have CTE. So the girl I dated before my wife, her birthday was June 2nd. My wife's birthday is June 3rd.
My first girlfriend was born May 30th. My second girlfriend was born May 31st. I might have that backwards.
I still do it to this day. Now that I've said that, she doesn't listen to the show. It's fine.
Yeah.
But when we first started dating, I wish, you know, happy birthday. She's like, it's tomorrow. I was like, right.
Eve.
I'm just.
Happy birthday, Eve.
I'm going to be working tomorrow, so I won't see you.
24 like, hours is not enough to say I love you. I wanted to make it 48.
Yeah. happy birthday, Eve.
Yeah.
Will you stop interrupting me?
I know. Jeez. Story of my life now, too.
And also those girls with the birthdays back-to-back, both named Kathy.
Oh. At least mine was Stephanie and Leanne. Like, those are two completely different names.
Yeah. I dated like 4 or 5 girls all named Kathy.
You have a type, then.
They weren't alike at all, but they were all. When I tell stories to people, they're like, they'll be like, "Is that Kathy 1 or 2?" Like they.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, she is the aunt of this woman who killed herself, and so now we've got two connections to this Armstrong case, and the Hildegard. It's funny because he starts speaking to her in German so that Judi Dench can't understand.
So she can't influence the
interview. Correct. And that's the way she's been the entire time, right? She's bossing her around.
Yeah.
So we find out that Hildegard had seen the conductor run. I don't remember if it was like it came in the room or what, but like a button snapped off of the coat, and you know, everybody's just like, we didn't see it. Like, we didn't see anybody else. There was nobody else here. So now he's trying to figure out who the hell was running around as dressed as a conductor, along with the woman in the red kimono. So they start searching all of the luggage, and they're searching everything. But the only thing they can't search is the countess's stuff, because there's some rule, I guess, that you can't diplomatic immunity. If that's Lethal it. Weapon 2 has taught me anything,
I thought that was going to be their out. Like, I thought they were going to pin it on the people with diplomatic immunity, and then you can't arrest them.
That's
the
way that works.
Yeah.
So
anyway, you're in law enforcement. I'm not, but I'm pretty sure it's that you can't charge people with a crime if they have diplomatic immunity.
I honestly
don't think that's you can't look in their luggage.
I think that's correct. You can, yes, they cannot be charged with. If Batman the Killing Joke has taught me anything, is you can't charge. Like, that's the crux of that book, is the Joker is a diplomat from somewhere, so they can't charge him with shooting Barbara Gordon in the stomach. Nah, it's whatever.
But when diplomats from other countries come to New York,
yeah,
to go to the UN,
they have to.
I'm fairly sure that at customs they can check their luggage if
I
they want
that's
to.
That's true. That's the federal.
They just can't charge them for the cocaine inside.
Right. Yeah.
We're gonna take this, but yeah. Be on your way.
Yeah.
So
is that a bald eagle egg? Yeah. You can't bring that here.
Give me that. Crack. So he's like, we've checked everybody's luggage. We can't find anything. He's like, well. We haven't checked everybody's luggage. So he goes to his room, him being Kenneth Branagh, and he opens up his suitcase, and inside of his suitcase, there is the red kimono.
And the conductor's
and
outfit.
And the conductor's outfit is like above something else, missing the button. And he's just like, man, and I do like the line where he's like, somebody is messing with me. Like, it's somebody, like, they're trying to goad me and mess with me. So... As we're progressing, he talks to Green Goblin.
Willem Dafoe.
Thank you. See, so I can get the plot, but I just can't remember people's names.
It's okay.
And he's just kind of like, so your accent's pretty good, but you're full of shit. And he's just like the look on Willem Dafoe's face is just like, oh, he's like, what gave it away? And he was just like, the number you said.
He pronounced
something wrong.
He had put the accent in the wrong place on a word.
Yeah, put the accent on the wrong syllable.
Yeah.
And he was just like...
It's like if he said aluminium.
Yeah, right. And everybody's like, what? And he was... So he's like, who are you? And he turns out he's a Pinkerton, which it, also not a thing anymore, right? Like, there's not the...
No.
That's not around. I don't think it's around, is it?
I think the agency might still be around, but... They're not what they used to be.
Well, no. I mean, they were. That was the gold standard of detective agencies.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And he kind of says that he was hired by Johnny Depp because Depp was worried that somebody was after him. And as he's going through his story, Perot's just kind of like, nope. Like, you're lying again. He's like, you used to be a police officer because of the gun that you have. Right? And he was just like, eh. And he puts his gun on the table, and he was just like, leave it here. Because I guess the gun that he had was a certain police-issued weapon. So now we're trying to figure out what... So now we know that Willem Dafoe is lying, but we don't know why. And it's like you said, when we figure out why, there's no... besides like breaking down these characters, he puts this together pretty quick. As to, like, the connections everybody has to everybody else.
Also, at the end, when he does make all those connections...
Right.
You ever watch the TV show Survivor?
I have not, actually. The season after the Rams won the Super Bowl was the only one that I watched.
Okay. On every episode of Survivor, on every season of Survivor, there are certain people who don't get much camera time because they're not the loudmouth or the idiot or the angry person or whoever it is. They're just the quiet people who are on that show who don't get a good edit, as it's called in television. That's what some of these characters in this movie are.
Yeah, I would agree.
You don't find out until the end, oh, so she's connected to him with that thing that happened, which we were never told about.
Right. Yeah, no, I would agree. Like, because there's 12 suspects, it's really hard
to give everybody ample screen time.
To spend time with all of them to to make it feel it like
wouldn't
it's entirely
be if you
fair.
Went faster.
I don't know. Like to me, the pace seemed like I was fine with the pace. Like I was engaged enough in each character, along with Kenneth Branagh, who I don't have an affinity for. Like I don't hate him or I don't love him. I don't see him enough as an actor to have an opinion. But I thought he was engaging. I liked his port. I thought his accent was good. Like sometimes you get these guys putting on French accents or other accents and it's not good.
No,
but I thought his
fine.
Accent
it's
was good.
It's just that the story is plodding.
Yeah.
Would be the word I would use to describe it.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree. Like it, I enjoyed it. It is a good looking movie.
Right.
And so
it is a good looking movie for sure.
Know, and I
definitely,
and I think it also, for me, it benefited from the fact that we don't get a lot of movies like this. We don't get a lot of movies that this isn't the kind of movie Hollywood doesn't make anymore. It's
yeah.
lots of big names, fancy costumes, pretty scenery, and some of it being chewed.
Sure.
You know, and that's okay.
It's, I'm cool
this
with
isn't,
it, yeah.
This
it's, isn't, not, it's not Nicolas Cage doing it.
Right, and it's right. not high art. Like, it's, I mean, it, with all due respect to Agatha Christie, I mean, she was, you know, the Stephen King of murder mysteries, mm-hmm. and like, it was designed for the rank and file to enjoy, and that's good. Like,
right.
there should be books for and, the rank, and I'm not a reader of great literature either, so I don't, you mean it in a an elitist way.
But speaking of the way it looks, there are two shots that stick in my mind that, during the movie. I went, whoa.
Yep.
One of them is a conversation between three or four people from a completely overhead perspective.
I thought yeah. that shot kicked ass.
That was beautiful. And I love the fact that he doesn't cut away from that shot
Never.
To show his close-ups of the people.
Right.
He yeah, just stays with that one shot.
They're going from Johnny Depp's cabin to Perot's cabin. And it just like that. Yeah, you're right. It's like, what there was another movie that does that. It's not Rope, is it? That goes like up and above. Is that Rope
so.
Is a tracking shot, right?
Yeah.
Rope is a series of unedited shots.
Right.
It's, and then
10 minutes long.
Yeah, they're 10 minutes because that's how much film could record at
sure.
a time. And so it's a series of like
okay.
10 or 11 minutes.
There was a
segments.
Movie that we may have seen or we talked about that's a tracking shot from above. Like it goes through walls and above.
Birdman does that.
That's
yes.
what it is.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
yeah.
And the other one that got me was the exteriors on this are absolutely beautiful.
Right.
Thanks to CGI.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. The trestle that the train is resting on when it's stuck in the avalanche is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And Branagh does this thing where there's someone having, I'm not going to remember who it is, but there's someone having a conversation with another person and there's an open doorway of the train.
Uh-huh.
And the camera starts below and comes up the trestle, keeping an eye on them the whole time, comes up the trestle and doesn't stop and then zoom in on them. It then goes past them to almost above them.
Yep.
It is so beautifully mastered
there,
that I'm glad he, again, didn't cut away.
Right.
There's another scene that is, it's Perot and I think his buddy, and I think they're talking, they're walking down the hallway, and the camera's on the outside of the train, and it's following them on, like, just the way it, like, it had to, I don't know how they did it, but like they're inside, the camera's outside and it's just following them down the train.
Yeah.
Like, and, but it's not like, it's not, it's just the, it's framed on the windows.
Yes.
Right. So it's not like it's further back or anything like that. It's not like a cut scene, but it's just them on the windows walking down. And I was like, man, that is such a cool shot. And I can't imagine, cause Brenna directed this too, right?
Yes.
So like that must be hard to do trick shots like that and be in the scene yourself and make sure that it's right. Like that, you know, Kevin Smith, the writer, director, star, you know, you're just like, I'm just going to stand here.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't seem.
And Kevin Smith movies,
they're stationary.
They don't look very good.
No, I think they started to look good towards the end.
Yeah.
But this is the sort of thing that if you're acting in the scene, you work it out with the cameraman and the cinematographer and the crew, the dolly, the key grip, all those people. Everybody knows what they're doing. Okay.
Right.
I'll be over here and I'm going to do my other job now.
Yeah.
You guys
just do
everything we just said.
Yeah.
Correct.
And we also have technology to the point where he can look at it in real time
Correct.
And make sure that, you know.
Absolutely.
Thank Jerry Lewis for that.
Jerry Lewis Video Village.
It's a hell of a thing. Film has come a long way,
yes.
you know. So when he's talking to the Judi Dench, he sees a picture of this woman, and he's just, you know, she kind of says, "Oh, that's the mother, like that's the mother of Judy Armstrong," And she was just like, oh, she was wonderful. And she was on stage and she was going to be this big thing. And after Daisy, not Daisy Ridley, the baby died, it broke her. Like, it was over. And he was like, that's interesting. Arden doesn't really like seem like a stage name. And we find out that, yeah, she was Jewish and she changed her name to avoid any problems. So when he goes to talk, finally he gets in to see the governor, the countess, and the husband, who was just like, so initially when I first saw him, I thought it was what's his name from Inside Llewellyn Davis?
Oh. Oscar Isaac?
I thought it was Daniel. Oscar Isaac. And I was just like, what happened? Like, why is he so skinny? What has happened to this? Did he lose a bunch of weight to be in this movie? And then obviously it's not him. But that initial scene at the bar, like, it looks like a very younger version of Oscar Isaac. So he's getting all fired up. One of the clues is that there is barbitol in Johnny Depp's drink, which is how he didn't move by being stabbed 12
times.
Which
I thought was that blue stuff at the barbershop with the combs in it.
Yeah. I thought it was stuff you sprayed in your hotel room to make sure there wasn't jizz on the bedspread.
Not just more jizz.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's how you do it. To each their own.
All right, Louis C.K., calm down.
This is where Dan would shake that maraca at us. Yes. That's what happened. So he goes and sees the governor, the countess, and he realizes there's a bunch of barbitol in her room. Like, she is addicted to this drug. And he starts, like, he's looking, he's like, can I take a look at your passport real quick? And she looks at it, and the front, there's a letter that has been erased. So he starts putting it together that this woman is the sister of Judy Armstrong. And, like, the husband freaks out, and he was just like, you don't, like, blah, you know, doing the whole fiery Latin husband thing, I guess. And he was just like, and now it's starting to, so now we've got four people who are connected to this Armstrong case. And as, so we're cutting short on time, but as we're progressing, it turns out all 12 have a tie to this, right? So Josh Gad is the son of the prosecutor. Let's see. Judy Dench is the grandmother to Daisy, the baby. The governess, or the countess, is the sister of Judy Armstrong. The Leslie Odom Jr. was, like, the best friend of the father, who, like, put him through medical school, and they only allowed, like, one African-American guy to go to medical school, and he made the Lance Ar- no, it's not made sure that he got in, and he was, like, his best buddy. It turns out that Daisy Ridley was the tutor, or like the nanny, I guess.
Something like that.
To the baby. And she, like, they, so like what we saw earlier in the movie was like they've the doctor and Daisy Ridley have found each other, like found solace in each other over losing this entire family that they loved. Penelope Cruz was the nurse for the baby, and who allowed Johnny Depp to sneak over and like break in and take the baby. So she has this, you know. Willem Dafoe was the boyfriend / lover of the other nanny who was accused and ended up killing herself. And then there is the butler, the guy with cancer, which that scene was electric as well. Like, when they're sitting down, and he was just like, that's not a, like, he's like, what's the matter? He's like, oh, I got a toothache. And he was just like, look, man, the way you talk to him, like, that's, it's terminal. And it turns out he's got, like, cancer all over. He's got, but, like, the way that Perot breaks that down with that guy, and the way the guy's just like, I've got, like, 4 months. I'm just going to say whatever I want. Like, right. I don't care.
Played by Derek Jacobi, by the way.
Who was fantastic. Yes. Like, he was great. And I don't remember, he may have been, like, he had a tie to the family as well. And then there's the other,
is it like the chauffeur?
No, because the chauffeur is the guy,
the other Hispanic guy.
Yeah, who they're like, everybody's trying to finger at immediately. They're like, what about his kind? You know, what about him? Yeah. Then there was the chauffeur who was, you know, so Perot is now, and then we've got Michelle Pfeiffer, who turns out is the grandmother to the baby, the mother to Judy, who she still looks like a million bucks.
Yeah,
like, man, she looks great.
Yep.
Did I tell you I just watched Into the Night?
No.
Which is the, so it's this, it's Jeff Goldblum and Michelle, a very young Michelle Pfeiffer, and it's a John Landis flick.
Right.
It was great. Like, it's a good little, I've never heard of it. I saw the poster. I was like, yeah, I'll, all right, fine, whatever. It's John Landis. I've never seen it before. I don't think there's ever been a John Landis movie I haven't seen. And then this popped up. It was great.
Well, you've rectified that.
I have rectified that. Done. And it turns out she, the picture that Perot saw in Judi Dench's, in her chamber, or her first class thing, is Michelle Pfeiffer. And she's just like, look, he destroyed my life. Like, he has taken everything from me, and I set all this up. I put all this in place. I'm the one that did it. And Perot is now, who's like this straight-laced detective, he's faced with a choice. He's like, these are the two options I have. I can say that, like, we know that he was in with the mob, and we could say that somebody snuck on board, killed him, and took off. Or all 12 of you are going to jail. So he has a really good scene with Michelle Pfeiffer. And it's funny because
he's very conflicted because he's very meticulous.
Right.
And he wants there to be justice, but this guy is such a dirtbag.
And he killed a baby.
He killed a baby.
Yeah.
He didn't eat it. In fairness, he didn't eat
Brad,
the baby.
I know, Brad, that turned you off from this movie altogether.
I know,
but
Brad really likes the movies where they eat the baby, but, you know, you got
get to the line somewhere.
But take your wins where you find them.
I mean,
at least they killed a baby.
That's true.
Right? And so,
be happy, Brad.
Right. And so, he doesn't feel like these people deserve to go to jail. This guy got what he deserved, but he also wants to uphold the law.
Right.
Whatever that law might be.
Not only that, if you're the most famous detective in the world,
you got to solve it.
Yeah, you got to solve it.
You got to solve it.
And she said, like, we haven't seen Michelle Pfeiffer act and be committed to a role. And I thought, again, I thought this scene with her and him was electric.
Right.
I thought they were good together. She kills her lines. Like, she delivers perfectly. The last time we saw her was that awful Jean Reno movie.
Well, she was in Mother.
I didn't see Mother.
Okay.
No.
Oh, that's right.
She plays Harris's wife.
She's Edie.
So it's really surprising she didn't eat a baby.
Yeah. And they're the only two good things in that movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take it. I'm glad I didn't have to see that. I sat through the stupid Rock movie. Like, what more do you want me to do?
Noah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she kind of, like, Perot takes out Willem Dafoe's gun, and he puts it on the table, and he was like, here are your options. Like, I'll take you all in. Or you can kill me, and, you know, we'll squash this right now. And I think this is the determining factor, is Michelle Pfeiffer, instead of
she takes the gun
and pointing at him, and then she decides, I'm not going to kill you. You didn't do anything wrong. These people still have a chance at a life, and she goes to kill herself, but the gun doesn't fire.
Because he's not an idiot.
He's not an idiot.
He gave her an unloaded gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Moron. And I think that is the thing.
That makes him feel like these are good people at their core.
Right.
But what is the reason for the gun thing at all?
So that's Willem Dafoe's gun.
Okay, but no, he lets her have the gun, which she thinks is loaded. And so he's going to, well, if she points it at me, I'll at least get her on attempted murder.
If she pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
I think what he was trying, this is how I interpret it, is that he felt like he should let these people go, but he wanted to know that they weren't,
this is a one-time thing.
They weren't murderers. That this is a one-time thing, and that they weren't prepared to commit another murder to cover up.
Well, all we find out is that she is not ready to do that. Doesn't say anything about the other 11.
That's true.
That is fair. But I will also say no one else was lunging for the gun to kill him. You know, like they, you know, like if you're prepared to do it, I would think you'd make that choice pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody lunges for the gun. I mean,
she goes.
It is definitely like murder mystery logic.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know what I mean?
Again, like, it's that murder by death ending.
Right.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, but I viewed it as it was a test, in that they passed it, in that they weren't prepared to commit a murder to cover up their murder. They were only prepared to commit a murder to
avenge.
Exact
justice. It's a broken family, and I use family, but all these 12 people are all connected to this case. So they get the train moving, they go to wherever they're going to go, and he tells the story about the mob guy. The mob guy, somebody must have gotten on the train, killed him, and then took off. And that's kind of how, like, he watches them all leave, and he kind of stays behind to talk with the police detective. And
And then we get our Avengers Initiative moment.
Correct. He's like, there's another case on the Nile.
Yes.
And he was just like, let's go. And
Murder on the Nile Express is the sequel.
That's the way it works. Yeah,
that's
right.
The next one.
Yeah.
Death on the Nile is the name of the book.
But I
know you call the book what you want.
For anybody who doesn't know, that's the actual Christie book.
I thought that I loved it. Like it was, I had so much fun. I was engaged with the story. I didn't know where it was going to go. I think maybe if I knew the ending, I probably wouldn't have liked it as much.
I get
because
that.
I didn't know anything was, going in.
Yeah, it's
it was all new.
Two things I need to add. One, you left out a part of the plot in which Poirot, in his own cabin on the train, keeps looking at a picture of a woman I am assuming is his wife.
Or
like
or
a
dead
girlfriend
wife,
that
or,
he was going to, yeah.
Whatever.
Was, right.
Why do we need that? Why throw that in there?
I think it gives, in my opinion.
We don't learn anything about
we
her
don't
or her.
We don't need that. I don't, you are correct. I think maybe it's just to add another level of
they're trying to humanize
care about
him
this
some,
guy,
but
you already do.
Yeah,
2 hours. Cut 5 minutes out.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the song that plays over the closing credits.
Yeah.
My wife turned to me and said, "That's Michelle Pfeiffer."
Oh,
she recognized
really?
Her voice, and I said, "Really?" And I looked it up, and sure enough, Kenneth Branagh wrote the lyrics. I don't know who wrote the music,
right?
And it is Michelle Pfeiffer singing it. And I tell you that now because you won't stick around to hear it when the closing credits are rolling, and you'll never hear that song again.
Oh. It was
unless
not very
it
good.
Gets nominated for an Oscar, because that's the sort of stupid song
yeah,
that gets nominated for an Oscar,
and they'll want Michelle Pfeiffer to come sing it.
Of course,
and you
but
know.
Instead they'll have Pink,
right? Yeah. Is this her first time singing on screen since
no.
Grease 2?
I was like, Fabulous,
Fabulous
Baker
Boys.
Baker
Boys.
Oh, my God. I love
May
the movie.
I
forgot about
words
that.
To you as a male, Red Velvet Dress.
That Fabulous yeah. Baker Boys is an amazing movie
yes.
if you've never
and
seen it.
And she can really sing.
She can. Yeah. I was in my head, I went straight to Grease 2.
When she sings Making Whoopee and climbs down the piano to sit next to him.
Yeah.
No more calls. We have a winner.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. When we'll see her again in Ant-Man and the Wasp. She's playing Janet Van Dyne. The original Wasp in that, and so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, but yeah, I can't believe I've made so many people watch that movie over the years. It's such a good movie.
That's one of those movies where like it showed up on HBO, and I was like, nah. And then I saw
Michelle
Pfeiffer, and I was like,
yeah,
all right, I'll stick it out. It's fine.
And the Bridges Brothers both very
good. Right. Yeah,
that's back when
particularly Bo. Because Jeff has the showier
role. Yeah.
But Bo Bridges, I think, is so solid in that as the brother. Yeah. Just, I'm just trying to make a buck.
Yeah. When he did the hair in a can.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And that was back when you could understand what Jeff Bridges was
That's
saying.
That's true. He didn't go full dude.
Yes.
Yeah, he was not the dude yet.
Back when they still paid him enough to enunciate.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, so I guess that's the movie. They set it up for a sequel, hopefully a franchise. I would like to see another one of these. I think I think your complaints are valid. I just like I said, I was more forgiving of them, and I would really like to see if they could replicate this. There was some humor in the movie that I wish there was a little bit more of.
Yep, he had some good.
Yeah, he
like
had
straight man one-liners,
right? And but not like in an undermining Hollywood cheesy way. Nope. Like they worked. I thought, you know.
Well, I think that they're. Maybe more people who like it the way you did than I did.
Right.
But I think that for people who go see it and have the experience that I had, there's going to be bad word of mouth on this.
Yeah.
I think there could be a big drop off. I know it did well in its first weekend.
Sure.
But I think there's going to be a big drop off
for
this thing going forward.
It's
going
to get smashed next week. Like
well, and then, but then the question is, how much money does Murder on the Orient Express have to make for them to say, let's now do Death on the Nile?
That's right. Yeah.
And I do think it's going to benefit by it can make a lot of money overseas.
Could. Yep.
You know, I think that there is going to be, especially in England.
Surprised
you know?
They didn't try to change one of those characters into an Asian character.
Yes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
no kidding. Well, the train was Oriental.
Oriental.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if that plays in China the way a Chinese
yeah,
character
they probably don't
does.
Like it quite
and there
as
were
much.
No Chinese investors in this. It may be the only movie
yeah,
of the year.
Yeah, that's true.
No
yeah,
Chinese
right.
people at all.
No kidding. That's because they have a hard time saying Christie.
I don't want to call it a dime store. Like detective.
Yeah, because she's better
because
than that.
Because that's better than that. But that's kind of...
Yeah, but it was nice to see a movie for grown-ups. So we don't get a lot of those that aren't like eat your vegetable, dour, sad Oscar bait type
right,
of things.
Right.
You don't just get kind of grand spectacle anymore.
My wife's review of this is if you need a 2 hour nap, here it is.
Oh, get out of here.
But again, I definitely think there will be people that feel that way. Yeah. Cool. That's it for this one. I guess let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
You can hear me Friday afternoons on KTRS. Download the app and listen, and find me on Twitter @PaulHarrisShow.
And this is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter @JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, you can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. You can also find us on iTunes where you can rate, review, subscribe. Next week will be
Justice League.
Justice League. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
It will be worth it. But you know what? When they suck, it's fun, too. So
I mean, if you go back, there's a 2.5-hour episode of Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. I don't mean to spoil anything for you guys, but in Justice League, they all did it.
Yeah. That's what if it's like the last one, they all did it, and that it was make a bad movie.
Yeah.
So,
Wonder Woman was good.
Okay, well, okay, that's true. Wonder Woman was good. The one before that.
That
was bad. And the five before that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, it was Miss Scarlet in the hall with a revolver.
Don't hate me for trying to shoot you.
Frankly, Scarlet, I don't give a damn. As I was trying to tell you, there are no bullets left in this gun, you see? One plus two plus one is...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.